at the request of our MVP, he's going to lead us in our new favorite song.
Thank you, guys, fans!
Para sí, se escapa Elliott, se van las diagonales, están las diagonales, y sí que Elliott, un tremendo hueco por el guardia izquierdo. ¡Wow! Lo veo y no lo creo. Zeke Elliott, son nueve acarreos a las diagonales. Increíble.
Increíble. Welcome to the Mavs Fanatic Podcast. My name is Nick Angstead, writer at Mavs Fanatic, joined as always by
He calls
himself the one and
the
only.
The one and the only. That's me. Taman R. Turner. I'm going to put the R in there.
So Taman calls himself the one and the only.
I am the one and the only.
But we actually have the one and the only.
That is true.
The Mavs and the Cowboys play-by-plays for Spanish broadcast. Victor Villalba in studio with us. Victor.
Hey, guys. Hey, thanks for the invitation. Hey, I'll tell you, that was an exciting play because that was the Cowboys at Pittsburgh game where it seemed like, you know, when they beat Green Bay, everyone was saying, okay, well, we'll see what happens in Pittsburgh at Heinz Field. And that was at the very end when Zeke just broke one
game
up the
winner.
Middle. And,
right.
You know, the Steelers, later in that audio, I say that they had their arms by their sides. You know, they basically were just given up. And that was the same game where Big Ben did the I'm going to spike it and then I'm
Thick
not
spike.
Going to. And there's a whole story with that one. But that was a fun game and that was a fun season, actually.
That was a great call, too. I don't know what you said. I know that you said incredible at the end.
Well, I said wow.
I know you said Zeke Elliott.
Yeah.
I did say wow.
And then Zeke Elliott, and I heard Dez Bryant in there somewhere. Too.
Yeah, right?
Somewhere, too. Do you have people that just listen and just listen for the just the feeling? Because Spanish radio seems to have a different sort of feel than like English radio. Like Taman was saying before the show that, man, we listen to other broadcasts and like other languages, it just puts English to shame.
English seems so boring. Like when something spectacular happens, like the Zeke play against Pittsburgh, it's cool. Like, but it's just not as fun. It just seems like in Spanish or other languages, it seems like it's so much more hyped.
Well, you know, in Spanish, it just seems that if you're not really getting excited, it's because you're asleep, you know? I mean, you have to, like, really get into it no matter what you're doing. Even the flavor of mustards in a particular arena,
right.
You get excited about them having the spicy too, you know?
Oh, did you do that because of the Steelers Heinz Field thing? Mustard?
No, not really. Although, you know, Heinz has mustard now,
too. Right. Yeah, right. You had to throw that in there.
But, you know, it's funny because the other day I was playing golf and they hooked us up with this other guy, this young guy, you know, and we got to talking, you know, what do you do? And I told him, you know, I do the Mavericks and the Cowboys and this and that. He goes, oh, hey, I listen to the SAP broadcast of the Maverick games on TV. And I was like, wow, really? You do? And he goes, yeah, man, it's so much more exciting. So, I mean, it was like, you know, you find people that do listen to you for that particular reason that, you know, hey, I don't really understand what you're saying, but it sounds exciting, or I'm practicing my Spanish, that type of thing. So it's fun.
Well, people that are practicing Spanish listen to you to try to, like...
I've run into people that do that, yeah.
That's what I should do.
Right?
how this came about is I sit next to Victor pretty much every single game in the media row, and so I should just scoot over a little bit and listen and try to pick up some words. That's probably how I should.
Oh, totally. I can put you on a headset anytime you want. You
oh, my gosh. And
Nick's going to come in here and speak my Spanish, and I'm going to be like, wait, what?
We have changed this to a Spanish
right?
podcast.
Bienvenidos al programa. Qué bueno que están con nosotros. El tremendo Taman y el tremendo Nick. Victor Villalba con ustedes. Qué bueno que nos acompañan.
Oh, man.
Nick, what did he say? Translate.
He said that Taman is always wrong and Nick is always right.
changing the script there, huh?
All right, so this is as good a time as any to talk about our friends at Draft. Taman,
I'm going to take it away.
You ready for some daily fantasy?
I am. Are you?
I am, sure.
Well, if you are, you should be playing on Draft. Get this. Your chances of winning on Draft are almost three times better than on FanDuel or DraftKings. Today's shows almost 90% of players lose on DraftKings. On FanDuel, over 40% of the money goes to just 1% of the players. If you're not a pro and not spending hours a day on fantasy, you should be playing on Draft. You know how to spell Draft. It's DRAFT. You'll win more often. It's statistically proven. So join me, download Draft, and just search Draft in the App Store, and it will come up first. Be sure to enter the promo code ABPN for Almighty Ballers Podcast Network. When you download it, you will get a 100% bonus when you deposit. Again, search Draft in the App Store, and be sure to enter the promo code ABPN for Almighty Ballers Podcast Network. Said it right that time.
Are you as announcers, are you allowed to do like daily fantasy and like fantasy sports?
I'm sure, yeah, you can. I mean, you know, it's more for fun than anything, right? Yeah. I mean, it's not like you can become a millionaire unless you're like a day trader or whatever like that. But yeah, the fact is that I personally have never really got into it. I did rotisserie baseball. That's how long I've been around. Rotisserie baseball.
Where you had to like write it down?
Yes. This is back a long time ago. I did rotisserie because a roommate of mine said, hey, can you help me with the draft? Because I don't know any of these guys. So, I mean, I went in there with him. We had a good time, you know, drinking a few beers and everything and just drafting our team, his team. And he ended up in last place. So, but, you know, as far as fantasy, I just don't, you know, it's kind of like this. I like to watch games because of the game itself.
Yeah.
I don't want to see individual things where all of a sudden I'm watching a game and I'm hoping that some guy gets a, you know, 120 yards and three touchdowns.
Or some other guy trips because you're playing against him.
Whatever. So, I mean, maybe that did pass me by. You know, I just don't I just never really have seem to get into that. But I do appreciate the fact that people have their teams and they make their, you know, like the draft, for example, that app that you guys were just talking about. I mean, hey, you know, it's fun and it puts a little more oomph into the game. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, but you don't need any more oomph in the game. You just love the game just for the game. And that's the way I've always been.
Yeah, I'm not really – I like fantasy. Don't get me wrong, I do, but I've been trying to get more involved in it.
There's
lately.
A joke in there somewhere about your takes.
Yeah, actually, I'm not horrible at fantasy. I'm just gonna let it be known. But it's been something I've had to get into because I kind of like doing my own thing when it comes to sports, and I love when it comes to particularly football. I love the Dallas Cowboys, and what other players or teams do, I don't really care as long as the Cowboys do well.
Yeah, because if you pick a player that's not like that's playing against your team,
yeah,
then you're like,
yeah,
like,
it's like it kills me. Yeah, exactly. And I don't like
it's
doing
so
that.
So yeah, that it gets weird when you're watching a game and you're like, you know, rooting for one guy on the other team, and it's almost like an oxymoron in a way. But
yeah,
but I guess you hang in there because you're into fantasy and that's what you're looking for. So.
As a Cowboys fan, whenever I do fantasy, I don't draft anyone else in the NFC East. Yes. It's just like my own little law there.
Well, that's just because you hate Eli Manning so much.
I do.
You just can't pick anybody that's even remotely near.
Yes, I can't stand him. I have a question for you, Victor.
Sure.
You do the Spanish broadcast for the Cowboys and Mavericks. Which one do you enjoy more?
Well, it's two different environments because the Cowboys, you know, I have a color
guy. Are better
guy.
Than the Mavericks.
Well,
that too.
Well, hey.
They haven't always been.
There were a few years, 8-8, remember, 3 years
tough
in
yeah.
a row. There was 4-12, remember that one too?
Oh, yeah.
Not making the playoffs, and then that 13-3 in 2007, where so and so went to the beach and came back and decided that the Giants were going to beat them. Anyway, the thing is, it's two different environments.
See the shots fired.
Kablam! But the two different environments because with the Cowboys, it's a 4-hour broadcast. It's you know, I got a color guy, I've got a sideline person,
oh, yeah.
got a producer, got an engineer. I mean, it's all sort of a team thing. We travel. With the team and stay at the team hotel the next day, go to the stadium and all that stuff. With the Mavericks, I travel with the team too, but you know, there's really no engineer. I just have a board next to me.
Yeah.
The station just connects, and there's a board up there just making sure everything is operational. And the game starts, and before you know it, you know, 5 minutes left in the half, and then before you know it, 5 minutes left in the game, and it's over. And usually it's like a 2 hour and you know, 2 hour, 4, 5, 6 minute affair. So it's pretty quick. So it's two different things, and it's really two different types of preparations and two different types of rhythms as well.
Interesting.
Yeah, because you know, football is like that. You know,
there's a certain cadence to it.
Primero 10, el balón en la 20, atrás, busca, tira el pase incompleto. And then, you know, blah, 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 blah. And then you get it back. And then sometimes there's moments when the game is very exciting. Sometimes it's just, you know, running the ball, whatever. In basketball, it always seems like the effort is always there. They're always going for it. Even the game in Philadelphia the other day when they got throttled by 42. Yeah, but there's still a lot of effort going on. So you got to stay with the pace. Maybe the excitement level wasn't really there when they were losing by 42.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to be really.
Well, it is kind of hard, but still the effort that the guys are giving on the field just still is infectious. So you kind of don't need. That's the thing about basketball. It's like it's hard to determine effort. I mean, sometimes you see guys just
Like James Harden's defense last year.
Well, sure. Sure. I mean, anyone's defense at any given moment sometimes.
Can be, yeah.
You know, but it's more like you notice when there's not focus. Yeah. You know, when guys are maybe not 100% there, and you notice it in little nuances of throwing the ball away or missing, putting up an air ball or being a little lackadaisical on defense, that type of thing. But usually, no one wants to get shown up in basketball, so there's always a lot of effort going on.
Unless you're in the All-Star game, then it's just...
That was ridiculous. Don't get me going on that.
Let me ask you this.
Do they have Spanish language for All-Star games and stuff like that?
I'm sure they do. I'm sure, the baseball All-Star game, I'm sure they have a Spanish broadcast.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
But, I mean, as far as All-Star games are concerned, baseball is really the pure All-Star game because no pitcher who is there as an All-Star is going to put up a gopher ball to anybody.
Yeah.
In fact, it's going behind your ear, if anything.
Right.
You know, they're going to throw gas every time they're out there. And then they're only there for, like, maybe an inning. At most, so I think baseball is the purest, but certainly there is baseball, Spanish All-Star game. I'm not sure about the NFL, and I'm really not sure about NBA, but most probably there is as far as being a SAP broadcast.
I want to get into the Mavs real quick. You brought up Friday night, they got throttled by the Sixers, and was it fun watching Justin Anderson maybe? Because, seeing him play well.
Justin's a great kid. I was able to be part of the team last year when he came on the scene, and he has tremendous energy. He's always yammering. I mean, you get on the bus, and he's in the back, and you hear him talking about this and talking about that.
I know he loves Madden. I got in a debate with him about that once.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't be surprised because, I mean, you know, he's like you. He's a young guy, and he wants to, you know, be doing what everyone's doing. And certainly there was a bit of energy with Justin Anderson with the Mavericks in town because you could tell, you could sense. And then Brett Brown put him in really early because he said after the game, you know, I wanted to get him in there early, obviously. So no, Justin, it's good to see him doing well. He had a career-high 19. He's had 19 three times this year. So good for him, and it looks like he's fitting in well with the guys. That's a young team, the Philadelphia team.
Right.
Before we get too far into the Mavericks, so you didn't major in, like, media or journalism, communications, or, like, anything like that. You kind of took a back way into this, you know, this field and this job, and you were a finance major, right?
Yeah.
I
graduated from Texas Tech with a finance degree, and then I got into the brokerage business, and then I was able to land a job in Monterrey, Mexico. My wife was from there, and my father-in-law found out about an opportunity with a joint venture, a Mexican-Japanese joint venture, and they were looking for a corporate treasurer, so it fit with my background, the fact that I was bilingual and all this other stuff. They had some banking relationships in the U.S. and banking relationships in Japan. So I interviewed, and it was a great opportunity for me. So we moved back there, and my wife was moving back home. And I'd lived in Monterrey before, too.
Yeah.
And it was great. It was great. So then a cousin of hers and I used to get together on Sundays, and we would watch football. We'd be drinking beer, watching football, and doing play-by-play, and just, you know, fooling around, whatever, just having fun. And all of a sudden, I thought, you know, hey, this was fun. This is fun. And there was a TV station, a government-owned TV station, that was broadcasting NFL games. So I thought, hey, I'm going to call them up. And
in English or in Spanish?
In Spanish. So they were basically rebroadcasting a CBS game because you had Pat Summerall and Pat Summerall and John Madden on the game. So, I mean, I'm telling, that's a long time ago. So anyway, so...
you don't need to say years.
Yeah, so I knew one of the guys that was on the broadcast, and to make a long story short, I got in touch with him, and he told me, well, look, we're not looking for anybody for TV. We're pretty good there. But the station is looking to do games at the same time via monitor, the same game with the same audio from the stadium for radio. So I said, okay, so what I need to contact? And he gave me the name, and this is back in the normal phone days, you know, hey, call him up, and get a hold of him and everything. And Rafael Carreon is his name. Good guy. I hooked up with him again on the phone after a number of years, and he's doing well. But anyway, so he says, come by the station. So I go to the station, and I, you know, hey, how you doing? This and that. And, you know, have you done radio before? No, not really. So he says, okay. He puts a tape in, and, you know, it's Cowboys at Niners. And I, he just goes, go. And I said, Okay.
Just right there in his office, he was just like...
Well, actually, it was kind of an edit room that they had
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah.
And because the TV station had like a football show too. So anyway, so he puts his tape in and he kind of looks at me like... And I could... Okay.
Bueno, amigos, qué bueno que están con nosotros. El Estadio del Candelero, el equipo de los 49 de San Francisco, visitando, recibiendo la visita del equipo de los Vaqueros de Dallas. Okay. Yeah. You're in.
Yeah.
And that was it.
So you're ready. In season awesome. And out.
Yeah. So I started doing play-by-play, and they found another guy to do color. And this guy that did color, we did a year of games, and then we did some college games in Monterrey as well, live. He really knew his football. I mean, he's a guy that back then, if you said, all right, who are the six linebackers of the Cleveland Browns? He would know. The starting,
wow,
and he would know the rotation guy, and he would know the special teams guy. He would know every. He knew
that
everything.
Very and their mom's names and where they went to high right? school.
Probably. We never got into that. Yeah. But the fact is that it was really good for us because he really knew his stuff, and I was just having fun doing the play-by-play. So then from there, I got a TV show for NFL on Saturdays, and then I started doing some college games as well live. And then I thought, hey, you know, I really like doing this. And then I moved back to Dallas, got a job at Univision. Then I got a job at a PR agency. Then I got my first job with the Cowboys. And then I went away. And then I came back in 2002 and started doing the Cowboys again. And then by 2005, the Mavericks had a need for Spanish radio, and they called me, and I kind of slipped in, and I've been doing both since.
And they hadn't had one. Mavericks hadn't had a Spanish radio before that, or did they?
No, they had.
They had. One.
Yeah, in fact, the guy that was doing the games had to leave because he got an opportunity with a network in Miami. So all of a sudden, he had to leave.
Huge.
And yeah, so, I mean, you know, you get opportunities. You have to make a decision.
Between the Cowboys and the Mavericks, what's been your favorite moment? Doing play-by-play for both of them. I mean, what's been your favorite? Was it the Mavericks winning the championship? Was it maybe Emmitt getting the rushing record? Dirk's 30,000? What was your favorite
moment?
Well,
you know, I mean, there's plenty of them. I mean, I remember, for example, that playoff against the Spurs where Vince Carter hit that shot from the corner.
Oh, yeah, that was awesome.
I mean, see, that was one of those moments that, I don't know if you guys are movie buffs, but, you know, directors have a way of really intensifying a particular moment.
Yeah.
Well, that moment was like, he's at the corner, he makes a move, gets Ginobili off him, he takes a step back, he sees the line, he goes, okay, here we go, puts the ball up. And it's almost like the ball was in the air, like, for a long, long time.
Yeah, like how many words did you get in between?
I didn't say anything. The ball, el tiro está en el aire. You know, I mean, it's like, so the ball's in the air, and that's like when the director obviously uses the slow motion or whatever. But somehow they make the walls of the room come closer.
Yeah.
Like the room just gets like really
everything's
tight.
Just
when
right,
the ball's in the air, it's like, and then when the ball went through and it went through the net, I mean, everybody was jumping up and down going crazy. I mean, the energy was just amazing. I mean, that's got to be one of the most intense moments.
Right.
You know, I mean, when the Mavericks won the championship, that's really exciting. I mean, to say, you know, hey, Dallas Fort Worth, those Mavericks son campeones. You know, I mean, that's like, that's pretty cool. You know, I mean, I didn't have anything rehearsed or anything because I don't rehearse anything. I mean, it's
you don't write anything down or like pick your spots. Or...
No. It's got to come from somewhere because I've been doing it. So.
Yeah.
You know, like someone was asking me, so do you have anything written down for when Dirk hits his 30,000th? I'm like, look at me. Do you think I have anything written down? I mean, do you? And he looked at me like, I don't know what you're asking.
Yeah, right.
Me. You
know? If I say no, does that mean he hits it right? I'm like...
Wait. I want to put you on the spot for a little bit. Can you replay Dirk's 30,000 shot?
See, we'd have to make the crowd noises and stuff.
Know, right?
You know what? I'll ask the boys to find that audio and I'll send it to you guys.
That'd be awesome.
It was, you know, it wasn't a cool moment because first of all, I mean, Nick, you were there.
Yeah.
It seemed like Dirk during the week. Dirk was saying, well, you know, I'm going to get the ball and I'm going to be a team player. And the game's
so dark.
This and that.
I'll play within the game.
Within the game. And if, when I get it, I get it. You know, hey, whatever. You know, the game starts, he's jacking him up. I mean, he's
just going in.
Remember?
Yeah.
He's just like, boom.
Every time he got the ball.
Totally. So then by the time he
was 8-for-10 coming in.
Oh, yeah.
Shot. Like,
oh,
it was ridiculous.
He had double figures before everyone was in their seats.
Yeah.
I mean, really. And then he has 18 at the end of the first half, and you know, every time he gets the ball, I mean, every time the Mavericks had the ball, everybody was standing up, and everyone had their phone out and video and stuff like that.
Oh, man.
So it was almost like you were riding that crescendo of that moment, because it was baseline over Larry Nance Jr., where he puts it up, makes it, and it's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to get out of there, you know.
And they were like, oh, wait, we still have 30 minutes more of this game.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, it was funny because after the second half of that game, it seemed like everybody was really listless, and they were pounding the Lakers anyway. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, and I don't think anybody remembers what everybody else did in the game.
Yeah, because,
Barnes and Curry had good games in that game, but nobody remembers that.
When we talked about it on the podcast, we had Chris Arnold on, and we were talking about how everybody was on the same page at that moment, where it was the media, the journalists, the other team, our team, all the players, everyone in the room, like, we all know what's going to happen.
Right.
Yeah, and the thing about that is that, you know, I try to you know, show excitement. I try to stay within the moment, and really, out of respect for Dirk, you know, you don't want to make it some caricaturesque thing. You know, you want to show excitement, the importance of the moment, because it is an important moment. I mean, the sixth guy to make 30,000 points in the NBA, such a legendary league amongst all sports leagues, you know, in the world. I mean, you want to really keep it to where, you know, if Dirk were to hear the play, he'd say, well, I don't know what he said, but it sounds good. You know, it sounds...
Dirk doesn't know any Spanish?
He speaks just a little bit. Because, I mean, in Europe, you guys been to Europe before?
I have.
When you go to Europe, I mean, everything's a train ride away.
Yeah.
And all the countries are so close together. I mean, there's people that speak 3, 4, 5 different languages. So I'm sure he speaks a little bit of Spanish.
Something, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, but Dirk, through the years, has been just a really, really good dude. I remember when he passed Oscar Robertson, we got off the plane and we flew back to Dallas, and I sort of sidled up to him as we were walking to where the luggage is and stuff, and I said, hey, Dirk, congratulations. You know, I mean, you get these moments when you're just with Dirk and, you know, not with everybody, you know, and you're just Dirk. And he put his arm around me, and it felt like, you know, my uncle, you know, like this big, tall guy.
uncle.
Yeah, exactly. No, he is really tall. But the thing is that he was really genuinely appreciative of the fact that I took the time to say to him, you know, hey, congratulations, Oscar Robertson. Wow, that's huge. You know?
Yeah. So, as a broadcaster, how much do you think about trying not to take away from what the player has done and try to make it like about yourself? Because you say, like, you hear on these, you know, Spanish broadcasts, you're like, oh, make it this huge, huge moment. And you're like, sometimes I feel like some broadcasters make it more about themselves than about, you try to make them sound, you know.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point, and I don't really like to talk about other broadcasters because, you know, it's just, hey. But there are moments when the Spanish language broadcaster will try to make more noise because of the way they're calling the play and make it like a cartoonish in a way. Like, I've listened to other broadcasters where I go, come on, really? But... hey, you know what? To each his own. I definitely like to let the emotions be part of it. But there's also moments, like, for example, I'm big on two things. One is that my color partner, and I've had a few, but Luis Perez and I, who's my color partner, we've been working for, gosh, 12 years now. I mean, he knows that when I'm calling a play, it's a touchdown, interception, whatever, you need to be quiet. You just need to be quiet, because I don't know if you've heard, you hear a broadcast and the pass, it's in the end zone, touchdown, the other guy's like, touchdown, it just sounds ridiculous.
Right. I'm from Cincinnati, and the Bengals color guy is like, you can hear him back, you're going, exactly.
So, like, I mean, that's kind of cartoonish in a way, but hey, you know, that's their deal.
Yeah.
But to me, you know, my color guy's going to get a chance to speak as much as he wants, because it's not about me speaking too much. And sometimes I notice, like, ooh, I'm talking too much, and I kind of, you know, bring it back a little bit. So that's number one. And number two is Spanish language broadcasters, for whatever reason, always have a tendency that dead air is bad air. Okay, so if I'm not talking, it means you're supposed to be talking.
Yeah.
And when in reality, sometimes I just go quiet just so you can hear the crowd, so it can breathe a little bit. And just, you know, being able to hear the crowd and feel the crowd. I mean, to me, that's important too.
Yeah.
So it's important to realize when I'm doing that. And the way you do that is, and we're all guilty of this in broadcasting, is a lot of times you know, I'll say something, and then Luis will say, yeah, you know, last year this guy had 1,200 yards. And then, you know, like, Oh, this last year, this guy had 1,200 yards. You know, I said exactly what he just said because I wasn't listening. So you got to pay attention or else you're going to do that. You're going to repeat people. You're going to repeat what they say. But then also you have to know that moment to where, you know, you're super serving the person really who is driving around in their car listening to the game. And that's the person that you don't want to, for them to think, God, well, are these guys ever going to shut up from the standpoint of it's just too much?
I feel, I feel like people think that when they're listening to our podcast. Are these guys ever going to
We need some quietness there.
Well, then maybe they should listen to Snoop. You know? Who else is on this? Who else is around here? Snoop and
Lil Wayne. He's going
to
have a channel.
Shout out to Dash Radio.
Yeah, we're about to be on Dash Radio. So,
nice.
This is always a theory that I've had. And tell me if this is really dumb, because I've always thought about this.
It's dumb.
Eventually, I would love to be a play-by-play guy. Okay. And I only speak English right now. But to learn another language, to become a broadcaster in that language, I would think that my odds would be better because there are less people trying to get into that. Is there?
Well, see, okay, that it's a good point, Nick. But from the standpoint of a broadcaster, you know, every single broadcaster that you talk to has a story.
Oh yeah.
I mean, and it's like they didn't just walk in the door and fill out and give their resume. You know,
a W-2.
I mean, fill out a, what do you call when you fill out the your name?
Like
and
contact information.
Whatever. Application, yeah. Thank you. You fill out an application.
I thought we were getting more technical than that.
You fill out an application. I mean, everybody, you know, they started in broadcasting. They did games in college. And then all of a sudden, they found their way to where, you know, they're doing a minor league team and then this and then that. And there's opportunities that come along. You know, it's hard to say, but certainly there is opportunity for people that want to get into Spanish language broadcasting.
Yeah.
But it they have to do something else as well. I mean, because, you know, I do the Cowboys, I do the Mavericks, I do some advisories as far as I help people with their marketing in Spanish and things like that too. So I've got things that I'm doing. I'm completely independent. So, I mean, I've been doing this for a long time. So, but certainly if all of a sudden, bing, you're speaking Spanish, I mean, I'm sure there'd be opportunities for you out there. Like, for example, you're a DBU baseball, you know what I mean? It's not a matter of having a Spanish broadcast because people are going to be listening. It's a matter of having a Spanish broadcast because people could be listening, but more like to say, we have a Spanish broadcast. You know, and you put it up on your website. Hey, people click on it. And they're like, hey, this is curious. And then you have the ability and the opportunity to maybe create an environment where people are practicing their Spanish. You know, and maybe all of a sudden you're the one doing the game. So
got to learn Spanish first.
Spanish girlfriend? Or no. Yeah. Not anymore, right?
No, so,
Well, there you go.
Let me ask you this question. let me ask you this question. Sure. Only because when I was in college, I did some play-by-play for baseball and basketball. And at the end of when I graduated, we do like a little blooper reel, kind of our funny moments or whatever.
Sure.
And one time, a player on our baseball team hit a 3-run home run, and I had a huge fail. Huh?
It was a grand slam.
No, it was a 3-run home run.
Oh, never mind.
Yeah, it was a 3-run home run, and I said it was a grand slam, but it definitely was not a grand slam. So it was a huge fail.
What school was this?
At Hofstra University in Long Island, New York.
Okay.
And so can you talk about any of your bloopers or one of your funny moments?
Where it's like, oops.
Yeah, like, whoops.
No. Well, you know, there is a play that it was the Cowboys at the Eagles, and Drew Bledsoe was the quarterback, and the ball was on the 6. The score was 30-24. And anyway, or 31-24.
Right.
I think that's what it was. So Bledsoe goes back. Terry Glenn goes in motion. He throws the ball in the end zone, and it's intercepted. And Lito Shepard takes it 100 yards back.
Oh, I think I remember that.
Yeah. I think it was like a Sunday night game or whatever.
Yeah.
So anyway, so we're there. I'm doing the game and really into it, really intense because, you know, the ball's at the 6 and there was a penalty and they moved the ball and they had another chance. So anyway, so he throws the ball and the moment it's intercepted, I basically yelled, "Ay Dios mío, interceptado!" Like that, which is, "Oh my God, intercepted!" So he's running and you hear the fireworks going off. I have to send you that play.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
But it's "Ay Dios mío" where I kind of let that slip out.
Right.
You don't say, "Oh my God," you know right. what I mean? Yeah. Well, I did.
You stay kind of objective.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, adios mio. But the naturalness of adios mio. You know, I've played it for people. It's too bad I didn't send it to you. I should have sent it to you. But I played it for people, and they get a big kick out of it because it's just so, like, off the charts. You know,
right,
it's like,
right.
Oh, my God. But as far as, like, real bloopers, I think maybe, you know, you get the number wrong.
Yeah.
You know, like, they throw it to one guy, and it's actually somebody else, and, you know, and sometimes there's moments in games where, for whatever reason, you keep on getting one guy wrong.
Right.
You know, so like it's the tight end and, you know, whatever. And every single time he gets the ball, you think it's this other guy. And it's almost like you kind of say on the air, you know I keep on doing this and I'm trying not to do it again. But other than that, I mean, it's you know, I've been – pretty lucky not to have any real.
Yeah, you don't want any massive bloopers.
Yeah, gaffes. You know, I mean, a lot of people ask me, "Hey, have you ever said a cuss word on the air?" And you know, it's almost like there's this block in your head that doesn't right. allow those to get through. You
like,
know,
I will be fired if I do.
Yeah,
this.
Well,
it's kind of like being in a room full of little kids. You're not going to just go up there and start cursing up a storm.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
It's like a little blocker's there.
Yeah, there's something there. There's something there that just governs your brain not to say, you know, a word that people are going to say like. Oh, wow.
Oh.
I can't believe you just said that.
Right.
Although it has happened. It happens to people. But when it comes to Spanish, it almost seems like... did that happen to you?
No, it happened. No. That happened to Derek Harper this year.
Well,
oh, yeah,
you're
right.
Right.
You're right.
When he was talking about how Carlisle said we're a crap team.
Yeah.
But he didn't say crap. He said
right.
the other
yes.
one.
Yeah. Yeah,
he was quoting Carlisle, and then he comes right. back and he's like, well... Probably should have said that.
Yeah, we're a bleep team, but yeah. we're a good bleep
yeah,
team.
Yeah, an underrated bleep team.
That's it.
Oh, man. So you talked about your relationship with Dirk. Do you have a special relationship or like a different kind of relationship with Mavericks players that speak Spanish, like a JJ or Nico? Doesn't Salo speak Spanish?
Yeah, Salo speaks Spanish, and yeah. I've spoken to Salo a few times here and there.
Yeah.
You know, JJ and I've done some interviews with him down yeah. the road, and there was a season where a brand was actually sponsoring an interview that I would do with him.
Oh, wow.
You know, the interview brought to you
yeah.
by, and so I'd go chase him down and we'd do the interview and then Nico, they did a real cool thing this year in the Maverick kickoff luncheon because they had me. It was Folliwell and Chuck. They were the ones doing the emceeing, and it was basically going player by player and, you know, kind of yammering back and forth, blah blah blah, what you do in the summer, what do you expect this year, this and then the other. So when it came to Nico, Mark actually called me up, and I went up on stage and I took the microphone and, you know, I welcomed him in Spanish and I did a translation back and forth.
Oh yeah, because his English isn't.
No, it's not.
It's not.
He's working on it.
It's not there yet.
Yeah, he's working on it. But it was really cool because, you know, that was just a way of really demonstrating that, first of all, hey, I do speak English, you know.
Yeah.
and
breaking news.
Yeah, breaking. News.
We've made it 30 minutes into the podcast.
Yeah,
we
right. I do speak English.
We learned that Victor Villalba.
Y hablo español también, fíjese nada más. But it was cool because you know, Nico, I had talked to him at Media Day and I said hello to him, and then it's almost like once they see you in action or they understand, they see you on the trips and stuff, then they kind of get it.
Yeah.
And then I've talked to him a couple times. But honestly, I really try to stay out of their way. You know, I'm not really one of these guys that, you know, I'm kind of hanging around hoping they invite me to dinner. No, none of that. You know, it's more like just, hey, you know, you guys are doing your thing. Same thing with the Cowboys. I mean, I've gotten to know a few of the players here and there. But normally it's just, you know, you guys have a very intense life. And, you know, the least I want to do is for one of the players to say, oh, my God, here comes this guy again.
Yeah,
you know?
So, that's so true.
Yeah, right. So I really
feel like that as a reporter. Like,
well, see, when you're a reporter, that's another story.
Yeah.
Because when you're a reporter, you have to be in the locker room, and you have to be rubbernecking, and you have to be getting sound. And they understand that.
Right.
But see, if you're in the locker room just because you want to be in the locker room, everybody knows it. Everybody knows. So if you don't have anything in particular to do in the locker room, you shouldn't be there. You really shouldn't be there.
That's true.
No, that's the way I see it.
Right. How do you think, or do you appreciate the way the NBA has tried to reach out to Spanish speakers, or do you think that they could do better?
Oh, yeah,
do you
think like the NFL can do better? The nights where they have like the low smash.
Yeah, or even going out to the Mavericks play and the Suns, they played out in Mexico City this year. Yeah. Do you think they've done a pretty good job at branding that?
Sure, certainly. I mean, they have the NBA, which is NBA in Spanish, and it's by the way, it sounds NENEBA. So it's cool the way they're doing it. There's a lot of Spanish broadcasts out there. You know, you got Houston, you got Miami, you got Orlando, you've got the Lakers.
The Orlando guy came in. He was really funny.
Oh, yeah.
I love meeting him.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
When he came. Yeah, what was his name?
Oh, I knew you would ask me that. Orlando, that is, oh, God. He would be mad if he knew I couldn't remember his name.
There was a lady that came up to him and was like, my daughter just wants to be you when she grows up.
Really?
To him, yeah.
No, he's a good guy. Joey Colon. Yeah. Joey Colon's a great guy. He's very, very colorful.
On and off the
mic. He does his thing. I'll tell you the thing about Joey Colon is that he actually runs his breaks himself. Because really? I have someone in the studio, the board op at the station, they're running the breaks. He's actually doing
plays
all
his
that.
Commercials and everything.
Totally. Wow. Totally. So Joey Colon's a good dude. Then you got Adrian Chavarria from the Rockets. You've got Jose Pañeda out in Miami. I mean, they're all real good guys.
Yeah.
As far as the NBA reaching out to Spanish, I mean, there's a lot of things probably that they do that we're not aware of.
Right.
And they probably, I mean, their website, you know, maybe I should visit it a little bit more often. But certainly they realize that basketball, not unlike baseball, is a very international sport.
Oh, sure.
Not just because people follow it, but because there's players in it that are Latino.
Right.
You know, you've got a number of Latino players in the NBA now. So,
I mean, even with like J.J. Barea, I mean, he has a huge following in Puerto Rico.
Yeah. Oh,
he's
totally.
Loved there.
Oh, man. When he showed up after they won the championship, I mean, it was like everyone has the day off.
Right.
You know? I mean, it was like J.J. Barea day. You know, it was amazing. He had a ticker tape parade, and for good reason.
Sure.
For good reason. I mean, J.J. is a great guy. He's somebody who came out of Northeastern without really much of a chance to play in the NBA. He was fantastic at Northeastern, and he made it as a undrafted guy, and here he is in his 11th season, and he went to Minnesota, and he's back here, and I mean, they missed him when he was hurt.
Yeah,
so.
And he's still killing it. That game yesterday against the Nets.
Totally.
Yeah. He had that
stretch. Oh, he got lucky there at the end, though, because he threw a ball away. Remember that?
Yeah. Yeah.
He did throw that ball away, and it was almost like, ah! Because I was saying, oh, boy. But then he came back, and he had another bucket, which was key. Huge. So, yeah, but so as far as the NBA in Spanish, there's no doubt that the NBA habla español. I mean, they speak Spanish,
right?
And they absolutely understand the importance.
Sure,
of it.
Sure, sure.
So let's move on. Let's stop talking about Spanish. Let's talk about the actual Mavericks.
Sure.
Oh, the Mavs.
Because you're also a Mavericks broadcaster, so there's two parts. And I'm sure people ask you about the Spanish stuff all the time. But the Mavericks are right now. They're 30-39. They have 13 games left. They're 3 games back from the 8th seed, and they're the 11th spot in the lottery. It's been this weird back and forth where, like, should they tank? Should they not tank? We've talked about it all year on this show.
We have.
We're not going to ask you which one you want because you're...
Oh, I got an answer for that.
You do?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, go for it.
I go with what Mark Cuban said. Mark Cuban said, hey, we're going to try the best we can. May the chips fall where they may. If we make the playoffs, great. If we don't, that's fine, too.
We call that organic tanking.
Yeah. Oh, well, sure. Well, sure. I mean, the thing is that it's hard for a team to basically tank when you got a guy like Dirk Nowitzki in the locker room. Because Dirk, I mean... When you visibly tank, yeah, it's because you're not playing your guys,
right,
or you're pulling them out, and you're saying, hey, I want to see what this guy has. You know, well, you're seeing what this guy has. You know what he has, and you know he doesn't have what the other guy sitting on the bench has. So that's why he's in there right now.
Right.
You know, I mean, you can see those things if you really want to, you know, press the button and put your finger on it. But as far as the Mavs are concerned, I mean, you know, they want to make the playoffs, but, you know, losing by 42 to Philadelphia, it's not conducive to think, you know, okay, are their collective heads really in it?
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, when they beat San Antonio, it's San Antonio.
Yeah.
Hey, man, on the way back on the plane, it was like party time. Everyone was like really pumped up. And then they beat Cleveland the very next night.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and they kind of went
with all their guys. Like, it wasn't like they rested all.
Exactly.
And it was also nice because Yogi was playing so well, too. I mean, he had just gotten there and he was just balling.
And then they went and played Portland and Yogi had a great game there.
Yeah, 32 points, yeah.
I mean, you know, and then all of a sudden they have these losses that you kind of like, you scratch your head and you think, you know, gosh, I mean, you know, you have to be able to do better than that. And I'm not just talking about Philadelphia. I think Philadelphia is one of those grades that you just, like the teacher just throws out, you know, for the grading curve or whatever. You know, you just kind of say, all right, see you. That one's gone. But there are other moments when you would hope that, you know, Wesley Matthews doesn't end up with like under 10 points. Because invariably, if Wesley Matthews has 10, 12, 14 points, the Mavericks are going to win. But he has a lot of defensive pressure too. But my point being that, you know, you have to have everybody contributing if indeed they're going to make these playoffs and they're going to have to go on a serious run because they've got a really challenging schedule.
Yeah. Now, I was going to say, Nick kind of brought it up. I mean, they're three games back, but this four-game homestand they're about to be on, they got to play Golden State, they got to play the Clippers, they got to play Toronto, and they got to play Oklahoma City. Can they win any of those?
Well, I'll tell you. You know, pointing to that game, Toronto, the game in Toronto, that was another one of those games that you don't close the game. You're in the game and you can't close the game.
They were right in that game.
And the Raptors
didn't have Kyle Lowry too, which
correct. Right.
Really
yeah, and that was right. That game was there for the taking. But the fact is that in baseball you have a closer who comes in, you set him up, he throws gas, you're out of the game. In basketball you've got a point guard that comes in and closes the game. And you know, for all practice. Practical purposes, the king of that, as far as my experience was concerned, was Jason Kidd. Jason Kidd was the guy that would come in towards the end of the game, knew exactly how to close the game, knew exactly not only what they were going to do on that possession, but what the other team was going to try to do on their possession and what he was going to try to do on the next possession. It's like he was playing chess because he was like three moves ahead of you.
Right.
While he's moving his piece, he's already thinking four moves already ahead of that one.
Right.
I mean, that's Jason Kidd.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's why, you know, Jason Kidd's one of the greatest, and that's why they were able to, 2011, go on that magical ride all the way to the playoffs and go all the way to the championship.
Yeah, it's hard to do that with super young players, too. With this organic tanking, they're going to throw out young guys. They're going to throw out a Yogi who's undrafted, who's cut twice by the Nets. I mean, he doesn't have a ton of NBA experience to look back on, or ton of even coaching from Carlisle. I mean,
right. How
many – I can't even count how many practices they've had since he's been on the team. Maybe like 10?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Well, yeah, and then they signed Manny Harris to a multi-year. I read that. He was on a 10-day. So Manny Harris is a young guy. He's been around for a little bit, but he's been just going crazy in the D League. Just these numbers are out of control.
Right. And, he's leading them in scoring.
You know, they want to give him some minutes too. So it'll be interesting. Certainly last 13 games, they got to play him, so we'll be there.
Yeah. So they have this rough stretch of games, and then they have after that they play five games on the road, which are road trips like that. I mean, are they just like a grind as a person that goes on the plane with them? And what is that like? Like,
well, you know, the road trips, the charter is like, for example, the charter for the Cowboys is a 757 stock American Airlines plane. And you get on and you have a seat. And
does it say Cowboys on the side?
No, it's not. In fact, that plane would fly the Cowboys to Philadelphia, and then from there, it would probably be the Philadelphia to Paris flight.
Oh, wow.
In other words, it's not a Cowboys plane. It's just a regular American Airlines plane.
Yeah.
But the Mavericks is a refurbished 757, and all the seats are like first class seats, and you know there's 170 people on the Cowboy flight. With the Mavericks,
man,
I think it's like maybe
that's like a full plane.
50. Yeah, right.
50. Yeah. Oh, it's packed. It's packed. But it's a different environment. Now, the one thing about the Cowboys is that you fly out on a Saturday, you go out Saturday night. The rule is don't get thrown in jail. Get up the next day. Get on a bus. Go to the game.
It's so sad that that's a rule.
It's got to be a rule.
Yeah.
I live by it. There's been a couple times when it was close. Like one time.
Oh, is this Victor?
Well,
this is the confession hour of the Mass Attack podcast.
One time in D.C., we were at this place, and and we walked out, and it was closing time, and you know, we were trying to get a cab, and cabs were going by, and they were like, you know, with their light on and everything going by. So finally one stopped, and you know, I was a little excitable at the time, you know. So I sit in the back
under the weather, maybe, yeah, right?
I sit in the back and behind the driver, and I grab his seat, and I'm like, "Why don't you guys stop? Why don't you stop like that?" And this guy's, I don't know from where, you know.
Yeah.
So he gets out of the car and kicks me out of the taxi, like right there in the middle of the street.
Oh.
And I'm yelling at him, and he's yelling at me. This police officer kind of calmly walks over there, and he looks at Luis and says, "Take him home or go to jail." So he grabbed me, and that was it.
Ooh.
That's about as close as I've gotten, yeah. Actually. But
that's why at least you were given the option.
Right?
Oh, totally.
Right?
Oh, no, totally, yeah. Totally. No, he gave me the option to get my act together or go and talk to a judge. But anyway, usually it's pretty tame. I mean, when there's really not that many crazy adventures. But the fact is that the next day you get on a bus, you go to the stadium, you do the game, you get on a bus, get on a plane, come home. With the Mavericks, it's more like, you know, this last road trip. I mean, they left on Sunday, flew to Toronto, and then Sunday night you basically go out, have some dinner or whatever, and
yeah.
Then Monday you get up, the bus leaves at whatever time you go to the stadium, and then I think that time we stayed overnight and then flew to D.C. and then did the game in D.C. then Philadelphia.
That was a great game.
The D.C. game.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They took care of the Wizards. Yeah. They took care of the Wizards. That was a good game. That was a game when you're saying, hey, you know what? The Mavericks got something in the tank.
Yeah.
But so you go to these different places. Now, these guys and their collective bargaining agreement, from what I understand, they have to stay at five-star hotels. So, I mean, five-star hotels,
oh, wow.
Ritz-Carlton, JW Marriott. I mean, these really, really cool places. And at the end of the day, a hotel room, whether it's a fancy hotel or just a regular hotel, it's a hotel room.
Still not your own bed.
Yeah. Exactly. So there are moments when you're there and you don't want to eat anything. It's too early or not appropriate to drink at this time.
Some people would disagree with
you. You want to read. Well, yeah.
Dirk and his 30,000 Bud Lights, I think.
Hey, that's Dirk. Give him a call. Put him on the line. You know, you don't want to read anything. I go to these rooms, and rarely do I even turn on my television, you know. So sometimes it's just kind of like, you know, if I was at home, I'd be sitting here probably watching some series that I'm, you know. What do you call when you watch it over and over?
Binge watching.
Binge watching. Thank you.
They have a word for that in Spanish.
Binge watching. Binge.
Like consuming a lot of something at one time.
Yeah, but it's more like you have to explain it. Binge is just like binge. Okay. Here it's more like, está viendo episodio tras episodio tras episodio tras episodio.
Again,
¿me entiendes? Uno tras otro. You know, so if you're at home, you know, you get up and you go to the fridge and you grab something, and you know, you're at home, you know, and you get in bed, it's your bed, you know, that type of thing. So, I mean, there are cool moments when you go to these towns, and you know, like you go up to Portland, and you go to Minneapolis, Memphis, San Francisco's cool. I mean, there is that thing, but at the end of the day, you know, you just want to get home. Especially after one of those long trips, and it's just so much more fun when the team is really like in that playoff run when they won the championship. I mean, it's just like, you know, with each step, things just get more exciting. And the cool thing about that is that all of a sudden you just step aside and you're just watching this whole thing happen.
Yeah,
you know, you're just watching all these you know. All these people just going crazy, you know, and you're actually just an observer, but really, really appreciating it at that time.
Yeah.
Looking the Mavs, taking a look like towards the future, like come the summer, what do you think they're going to do? What should their focus be? Because if they don't make the playoffs, obviously their summer is going to start a little bit early.
Sure.
So what do Mark Cuban, Donnie Nelson, Rick Carlisle, what's going to be their focus come the summer?
Well, certainly the Dirk question is up in the air, because Dirk has said, he said it in Media Day this year, he said it in Media Day last year, I'm almost sure, but this year I do distinctly remember him saying that, listen, I'm not going to say I'm going to retire at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
I'm just not going to do it.
He doesn't want to do it on his farewell
He doesn't want to do farewell. He doesn't want to do the swan song. He doesn't want to do any of that. But that's classic Dirk. That's just Dirk Nowitzki. How he is.
I know he said to who was it? Nick, Mark Stein. I think he said he was coming back.
He already did say that.
Yeah.
But see, at the beginning of the season, he was saying, "Look, I signed a 2-year deal. Let's just see what happens this year. At the end of the season, I'll just see where I'm at, and then look at the last year of my deal."
It didn't look good at the beginning when the Mavericks had the bad start, all the injuries. Dirk had the Achilles injury. It didn't look well.
They were asking him, and he was like, "Man, you know, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know right now. You know, if I'm hurting a team, it doesn't feel good." I mean, that's just, you know, that's Dirk speak. But the fact is that he has said that he's coming back next year.
Yeah, right.
And I'm pretty sure. I'm not a betting man, but I would put money on the fact that he'll play his 20th year, and then that'll be it.
Yeah.
That'll be it. He'll just say, you know, thank you very much. The sound of 20 just seems to be ringing in his head. He's said it before. So starting from that information, I mean, what do you do as far as next year with Nerlens Noel, where you're maybe going to start him and bring Dirk off the bench? Because Dirk is out of position playing center.
Yeah.
I mean, he is.
We saw it yesterday in the Nets game when Brook Lopez, I mean, he just goes over him.
Right.
You know, like, he grabs that rebound over all five of them.
Well, Brook Lopez is the center. I mean, you know, he's one of these guys that kind of moves around slowly, and he's got a touch. I mean, he had over 20 points. He had a good game. But the fact is that Dirk's playing out of position, and he's doing the best he can. And you know, you'd like to see him at power forward and Harrison Barnes. I mean, certainly Harrison Barnes being the small forward. Nerlens Noel, why not play center? And then, I mean, it looks like they're investing some time on Yogi, and Seth seems to be coming on too. It's you know, the guys like Devin, the guys like JJ, you know,
the vets,
and also, you know, the guys that bring energy into the court. I mean, you need to find those guys. So I'm sure they're going to be looking for all those different options. It seems like every time they have their training camp, there's guys that you've never heard of because we don't know that much about all these guys.
Right.
But the fact is that they'll have some of those guys in there, and they'll try to make a run at it again. But certainly the post Dirk, the post Dirk era of the Dallas Mavericks is really approaching very quickly, and that's when it's going to get really interesting. You know, how they reconform that particular team, and I mean, no one's going to take Dirk's place, obviously, but who is going to fill the vacuum of a Dirk not being in uniform at any given moment or in street clothes because he's not playing that night? I mean, that's going to be interesting for this franchise moving forward.
Is it looking like Harrison and Noel? Is that looks like the direction they're going? I mean, Harrison got big money. We're assuming Noel's probably going to get some big money as well. If that's the route they go, is that is that really the future that they're going to build around?
Well, you know, you got Wesley Matthews in there too.
Yeah.
And, you know, Wesley Wesley never takes a day off, obviously. I mean, the guy's a complete gamer. He's always, like that one game in Portland when he played that super defense on their point guard.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he's an amazing athlete. But sometimes, you know, he just doesn't contribute on the offensive side. So they maxed him out, right? Isn't he a max out guy?
At the time he was.
Yeah. At the time he was.
Because he
was supposed to come there with DeAndre, and they both got big money for it until DeAndre flopped.
And then they upped his money to an actual.
Right, right.
Right, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, there you go. So, I mean, they need a little more out of Wesley on the offensive side. But certainly it's going to be interesting to see what happens there. You know, Harrison Barnes, he's a young guy, though. I mean, people think he's like this, you know, old, you know, stodgy veteran. And I mean, he's a young guy. He's 24 years old. So he does feel the responsibility of being Harrison Barnes with the Mavericks. There's no doubt about that.
He talks like an old vet, though. Like,
no, totally.
Andrew Bogut at media day joked that he was like a senator. Because that's the way he talks.
That's
he just
right.
Talks,
that's
like,
right.
So calculated. Yeah. And so, like,
oh, he's a sharp kid. There's no doubt about it. He's a sharp guy.
Yeah, and he knows. He knows that this is, you know, that they're starting to hand the reins to him on this team, and they're running plays for him like they would for Dirk, too.
Sure. Sure.
Now, so what are your thoughts about Nerlens Noel as a player? When you watch him and you see, is he all that he's cracked up to be when he was coming out of Kentucky, or, you know, what people have been saying about him?
Well, certainly it almost seems like Philadelphia with Embiid, they just decided, hey, you know what, we don't need to keep this guy around.
Because Embiid is very good.
Yeah, he is very good.
Nick has a really huge obsession with Joel Embiid.
Embiid.
It's really a weird obsession.
And then they got that other kid, Jahlil Okafor. I mean, he's a big kid and he can play. You know, Nerlens Noel is he maybe isn't as structurally favored as Okafor, for example. He doesn't seem to be as squared,
like physically, that he's built. Yeah,
but certainly he's coming into a moment when he can start really putting a lot of his personality on the court, from the standpoint that the guys know what he likes to do and they go to that. And yeah, he is a presence, you know, under the boards. Didn't he have a 17 rebound game this year?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he does. There's definitely a lot of potential there, and a lot of times for these guys that are not that big, it's their moves and their angles and the things that they do in the paint. I mean, not everybody can just be, you know, like Boogie Cousins, you know, that size.
Not everybody can be Boogie Cousins.
Yeah, exactly. That particular
in many
size.
Different ways.
Right.
Totally. Yeah. But certainly he has he at this point, I mean, there's no reason why he shouldn't be a starting center for the Dallas Mavericks.
Yeah.
It's almost like they want to fast forward him to the point where he knows he's the starting center now. And they, you know, a lot of that has to do with, you know, with Rick Carlisle, the way he does things.
Yeah.
And, you know, Rick is Rick, you know. He's going to figure it out the way he
Rick
wants
is going to Rick. That is so true.
Right. Rick's going to Rick.
There were some questions about Nerlens Noel. His character is, you know, he was late a couple times at the beginning when he first started. Is that something that you hear about, or is, you know, is that just something?
No,
that
it was news to me when I heard it, when he didn't start in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Which was another game that they should have closed.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, when these games come to my mind, like, you know, you go to Atlanta, you go to Atlanta and come back. I mean, go there, win, close the game, and come back. But anyway, yet I digress. I didn't find out about it until someone called me and said, hey, did you hear about Nerlens? And I was like, no, what happened? No. Oh, he was late to the plane. And then I thought, okay, I'm on the plane. I'm sitting there. Mark Follow was there. It seems like everybody's there, and we're not taking off. I mean, why aren't we taking off yet? We took off. Yeah, we took off a little later, so that was the reason why.
Yeah,
but apparently, for all practical purposes, he apologized to everybody. He realized that you can't do that, and certainly, the way the Mavericks roll, as far as discipline is concerned, you can't do that. So, you know, it seems to me that these guys, by and large, live in another galaxy. I mean, they're like they're way up there, and I mean, I never see them. I don't know what they're doing, and it's just one of those things that he seems like he's a character guy. I mean, he seems like he realizes that he's a professional and he's got to behave that way.
And it's probably a completely different environment than he was in Philadelphia, where there's, you know, this team, the Mavericks team, has a bunch of veterans on it, and as Rick Carlisle, who's been a coach in this league for forever, and they, you know, Philadelphia, you got, you know, your veteran guy is Ersan Ilyasova, who's been around, but, and then Gerald Henderson is another guy that's their vet. I think the longest tenured player is Tiago Splitter on their team. Guy doesn't even play.
Yeah, no, there's been a report saying that Nerlens Noel really likes the veterans being here because they can hold some of those younger players accountable.
Oh, totally. And and I've heard it from guys. When you walk in the locker room and you just observe Dirk and see how he goes about things. And
lockers are right next to each other.
Yeah, well, you know, when you see the way he goes about things, I mean, it's, you can't help but just, first of all, you know, say, wow. And then secondly, you know, there is a way to go about doing things, and certainly that's the way he goes about it, because that's the way he feels is the right way. And if he's Dirk Nowitzki and he thinks it's the right way, well, then there's certain things you can emulate from him.
There's a lot of weight that comes with Dirk Nowitzki saying that this is the right way. this is the right way to do it.
Right.
I mean, man, completely. So,
love it.
Going forward, this homestand seems to be super important. The Mavs are three games back, and they got this four-game home stretch against all playoff teams. If the Mavericks don't come away with two or three wins in this, do you think the playoff hopes are done? Because that's what a lot of our writers and what we're talking about on, you know, on Twitter and people like that are like, if they don't win some of these games, I think that that's done and they should just tank the rest of the season.
Well, right now it's one of those bulbs that goes off, you know, but then you kind of tap on it and it still kind of turns on, you know.
Yeah.
And you kind of tap on it and it comes back on again, but then it goes off again and you tap on it. You know, it just it seems to me that really at this point the light is off. The way it looks is just, You know, it just does. It doesn't look favorable from the standpoint that they're lacking defensive consistency.
Yeah.
You know, and when that happens, you know, you got a stretch of games. You got Denver. You know, who knows how they're playing right now? You got Portland. Portland's schedule, from what I've heard, is much more favorable than the Mavericks is. And you know, then you got this game against Denver towards the latter part of the season in Dallas, where it could mean something there at the end. It'd be nice if it did.
Yeah.
But you know, when you see games that where they just can't seem to close it, and like once again, I'm throwing that Philadelphia game out the window. I'm not even talking about that one. But
it's like they forgot there was a game.
Yeah, like whoops.
You know, but it's so weird because there, you know, I sit on a baseline up a bit on a riser, and I'm kind of close to the action, and it's like the effort's there, but something, you look at the score and you go, whoa, like, did I miss something?
What?
Yeah, did I miss something here? And it's just, once again, it's the focus. And the focus part of it is on defense.
Yeah.
On defense when, you know, the other kid, Robert Covington.
Yeah.
He had a couple of dunks, like, where not even slam dunk, just putting it in the hole to where it was like he was wide open under the bucket. I mean, that's a lack of focus somehow. And the only way you really can, I guess, sink your teeth into that is by looking at video, by looking at, you know, at the video and dissecting it and saying, you know, it comes down to footwork, it comes down to positioning, it comes down to, you know, the other day I was reading about a point guard who gets a little too excited looking for his rebound on a shot, and when he goes after it and he doesn't get the rebound, well, guess what? He's way back over here under his bucket, and he is way off pace in defense. He should be running on the other way.
Is that Russell Westbrook?
No, it was...
Because it should be.
Who was it? It was... I can't remember who
somebody,
it was.
Somebody,
Yeah, but the fact is that wrong positioning. I mean, you know, you got to hope that one of your guys gets that rebound because you do have to play defense. And a lot of that comes out in the video. I mean, you can't figure it out right then and there because there's so much going on at the same time. But focus on the defensive side, it really has been the detriment to the Dallas Mavericks.
When you lose by 42 points, like, what's the mood? I mean, going from Philly to Brooklyn,
quiet.
I mean, just...
Really quiet.
Just somber, just
no one
mad,
talks to each other.
Annoyed.
No, I mean, you know, you get on the... There's really two buses. There's, after the game, there's the first bus that takes off, usually goes to the airport. That time, Philadelphia... They took the train because from D.C. they took the train to Philadelphia, which is really fun. And the train was pretty cool. And then from Philadelphia, they took the train to New York. So you get on the bus, and there's a smattering of players that get on the first bus.
Yeah.
And then there's a second bus where the rest of the players and some of the beat guys and some of the other people involved get on. So, I mean, the bus to the train station was just real quiet because, I mean, you know, that's kind of the mood. And then on the train, you know, the players are in one car. Once you get on the plane, you don't see the players. So
no,
it's,
really.
Yeah, it's not like you're hanging out with them or anything like that. So they're in one car, and then the coaches are in another car. So we, you know, me, Folliwell, and Chuck Cooperstein, and, you know, Earl K. Sneed, and some of the other folks, we're in that one car. So we're talking about stuff and this and that and the other. But, like, for example, when they beat San Antonio – that was a huge game. I mean, that was a huge win. It was exciting. They hadn't won in, like, I don't know, 25 years or something like that. I mean, it gotten to the point where, like, really?
Probably seemed that way.
It did. And so, and they come out and they win and there's energy and they close the game and, you know, and Popovich has everyone on the court. It's not like he's resting guys or anything like that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really exciting. So you get on the bus and everyone's, like, you know, really talking it up and everyone's, you know, you hear people, you know, laughing, smattering and laughing here and there, you know, and then you get on the plane and it's a short flight and it's just, you know, everyone's high energy. But when there's a loss like that, you know, like after Toronto, it's somber. It's quiet.
So if you had to choose right now, are the Mavericks going to make the playoffs or are they not?
Oh, man, why do you have to ask that?
Because it's the last question. I had to throw it out there.
Well, look, just if I'm Victor Villalba, CPA, right? Like I'm doing your taxes this year.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? And I have nothing to do with the Mavericks or anything like that. I'm not the radio broadcaster. I'd say they're not making the playoffs. They're just not. They don't have the heart. They don't have the defensive composure. They don't have the closing ability, and they just don't seem to have it. They don't have it. Whatever. I mean, well, play defense is it, you know?
Yeah, which is weird because they're 11th in defensive rating in the NBA.
Well, then that points to closing. Points to closing because you play good defense, and then you have these quarters where they score 17 points. I mean, that's just that's not going to cut it. No. So to answer your question, I would say no. I would say no. I wouldn't be surprised if they did.
But you said Victor, the CPA, says they won't make the playoffs. But Victor, the actual Victor, says they're going to win the championship.
Oh,
right?
Totally.
Victor, the announcer, wants to go to the playoffs. Yeah.
Right? Hey, Victor, the announcer, says they're going to win more games than they're going to lose, and they're going to make the playoffs. They're going to play the Golden State Warriors. They're going to beat them in six.
Yeah. In six games.
It'll be the 07 revenge. Right?
Totally. Total 07 revenge. Yes. That's going to be beautiful. It's going to be awesome.
Thank you so much for joining us, Victor.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Anytime.
You can definitely check out the Spanish language. Whether you speak Spanish or not, check out the Spanish language broadcast of the Mavericks and Cowboys.
Yes.
I'm Nick Angstead.
I'm Tamen Turner. I'm always right. Nick's always wrong.
Please, guys, rate and review our podcast on iTunes. We only got one there, and it's probably somebody that we know. So, right. So please go there. It really helps us out with, you know, listens and exposure and things like that. So thanks so much for joining us.
Appreciate it.
We'll be back again.